Welcome to the Board Game Workshop. I'm your host, Chris Anderson. This is the third and final part of the NunPub recording. In this part, Ben joins Andrea, Carl, and me, and we talk about the creation of NunPub and generally about online conventions. Judging for round three of the design contest is still going on. If you'd like to help out with the digital judging, you can head over to theboardgameworkshop.com, click on the design contest link and the round three section. And that'll give you links to the tabletop simulator versions of the finalists that's made digital versions. You can play those with your group and fill out a judge form and help us get feedback for those games. And if you're in the U.S. and preferably in the New England area and you want to play the physical games, you can get in touch with me, chris@theboardgameworkshop.com, and we can set up a time to get you one or more of the finalist games to play with your group. On to the show. So I noticed Ben jumped into the voice channel. Ben, can you hear us?
No, I can't at all.
Okay, well, it's a minor problem.
No, I jumped in right as you were talking about, you know, looking at the cost against what you might have made back on a game. And it was interesting because I wonder, Chris, how much did you spend on prototypes for Invino?
Very little. I did print. I printed it one time. You know, there are, I never played it.
Some offsets, I guess.
Right, but the effort of talking to people about it.
You mean writing up a quick 12-second slideshow that we got to watch?
No, I mean the like weeks of talking to Jason afterwards and fine-tuning stuff. Making the game took no effort. It came out fully made.
It came out in Andrea's part. It was Andrea's part where, you know, going back and forth and maybe dealing with some of that stuff. Some of Carla's part being the publisher, you know, trying to figure out how the cheese worked and if it was going to end up in the initial box, those types of things.
Yeah, all that work. If I count those hours, then it was very little money. If I don't count those, then yeah, it's all profit.
Right.
Well, and that's like the best case scenario. The best case is you have an idea and it just works, and then you just pitch it. Like, but even then, like, getting paid hourly is so bad.
Yes.
Like, think about all the games that don't come out perfect, almost.
I mean, I've still only made a couple hundred dollars off the game in 4 years. So, even if no effort, it's very small.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, same with, Say What Again, is it was noodling around mostly. It didn't feel like work. But I didn't do it to make money, and I'm not expecting it. But there was all, you know, the rule book was the hardest part because we knew what we wanted to happen, and we needed to make sure we had very specific language that dumb people could understand.
Yes, rule books. So much fun.
In a postcard.
Oh, yeah. I mean, all the Button Shy games, the physical restriction of how you can write the rules, like that was the issue for Tempest Quest, and just Jason decided to just do it online, but so each one's a page, which we wouldn't have had in the physical sheet, and which is also a huge problem for my current game, Tin Engine, because I'm trying to fit it all in a mint tin, and that's not a lot of space to write the rules. So I keep cutting rules, and that's a better game, maybe?
Can be a better game if you're cutting rules that don't matter to the core.
I added randomness. Andrea doesn't like it. I don't know.
Yeah, that was one of the ones that I was playing every week until he added random elements.
And then you noped out?
I mean, I'll still play. He also hasn't shown up the past couple weeks.
It has been busy. So, Ben, how...
School or Chris or just other stuff?
Well, I've got the design contest going on.
The design contest, yeah.
The design contest is taking a lot of effort this year. It's been... Usually, like last year, we ended up with over 160 judges. This year, we've got... I think 150-ish signed up, but less than that are actually doing the judging. So I've been doing a lot more pushing to get judges on, and half the judges are also designers. So it's been a smaller turnout, which kind of surprised me because I thought there'd be more people at home and looking for something to do. But that is not the way the world has worked. People are home, but they have looked for something to do, and now they have a lot of things they're doing remotely. And everyone seems even busier than they were.
And I think because all necessities are on the computer now, people then don't want to spend their free time also on the computer.
Yeah, that's a good point.
That is true.
I've been bouncing out of my office for NunPub.
going and watching panels with my phone on the TV simply to get out of the office so I wasn't sitting in here for, you know, it's one thing to be in a big, you know, unpub space with for 16 hours a day, but I have an 8x9 office and I can't be in here for 16 hours a day.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was on my laptop on the kitchen table for 14 hours yesterday, and like when I stood up and it was dark out, I was just like, what did I just do?
I'm lucky to have a 4-year-old German Shepherd who is happy for me to be home because it means we're doing stuff together. So I'm purposefully taking breaks because she won't let me not.
It's good to have someone to remind you.
Just to do whatever. So,
I mean, it's real. Like, I do not have a giant dog in my house that makes me go, like, walk them.
But you have ducks
that
you can pet.
I do. I do go see the ducks occasionally, about once a week, if I remember. But yeah, like otherwise I'm just like staring at my computer to like do all the publishing stuff. And then it's like, oh, do I want to stare at my computer for fun for playtesting too? Do I just want to stare at my computer every day for like 16 hours and lose track of like what day or month it is because I'm not leaving the house ever? Yeah. So, I've realized that I get like really stressed out and like headaches and stuff. If I'm just on the computer in the same room. And, like, I wake up, I come out of my bedroom into, like, the living room and just stay here, and then I go to bed, and that's it. So, like, I've had to do, like, a variety of things of just, like, I can't be on the computer all the time. So, yeah, of course I'm not judging because I would be on the computer more times than, I don't know, if I'm on the computer anyway, I should probably answer the emails that people send me in, like, the hundreds.
Yeah.
Are you seeing more pitches because other people are home, Carla?
Yeah, I think so. Well, usually like there's a lot of pitches I get like around conventions where people are like, "Oh yeah, you're gonna be here, and I have this game that you'll love, obviously." But yeah, I'm getting like a lot of pitches in, like anyway. So much so that I've been working with David Bruglia, and I'm just forwarding all the pitches to him. So he's getting some amount of pitches and going through them and, like, getting out the ones that he thinks I won't like. So, yeah, I mean, if I had to, like, find somebody to help, then that means I have a lot.
Yeah, but I wasn't sure if you were just seeing a lot of mediocre ones, you know, just because people are at home and they're like, I can make a game. I've got, you know, to that point we were speaking about people finding stuff to do.
Well, okay, so I'm just going to do some real talk here. Like, I've never signed a game from a pitch. Maybe all of them are mediocre? Like, so I'm also, like, so Weird Draft Games and Galactic Raptor Games, like, I am very particular, and I'm making a product and a brand, and it has to fit that brand. And also, I am a woman, and I know things, like, and I will tell you opinions. So, one, I need a very specific game, but also I need a very specific designer that is fine with a woman telling them what to do. And those things don't pair up all that much. Like,
I feel like you and I had a similar conversation last fall in all of our adventures where we saw each other for like 4 straight weeks.
Yeah, it's like, how can a man offend me again? Like, or like speed dating. It's like, how is someone going to be like sexist in a new and different weird way? Like, who is gonna cry today?
Do you have a bingo card?
I mean, I probably should, so I would at least gamify this whole like horrifying situation, but I haven't gone that far. If you do it, that's perfectly fine, and we can all laugh about it. Like, oh yeah, Carla gave somebody a panic attack again because she got too involved and her face doesn't show emotions. Whatever.
Your face does show emotions. They just might not be in tune with seeing them.
Yeah, it shows
them in a different way.
Mm-hmm.
It's the emotion of the text chat you're reading.
Somebody DM'd me earlier who's been going to Nunpub, said, you know, I went to sleep after 1 a.m. and was up before 7. I feel like I'm at a con. Also, I woke up angry at a game I played, which was incredibly far off on so many mechanics, but is planning to go to Kickstarter next month. Feels totally like a normal con.
I'm sure it'll sort itself out. They always do on Kickstarter. That's what it's for, right?
Do they?
Yeah,
you don't have to.
You put it up, and then someone fixes it.
Before you go to Kickstarter.
No, later. So, later's better. Second edition, that's when you learn the lessons.
There's been plenty of games, like, where I've been, like, I've gone to, like, prototyping conventions, like, they're my favorite kind, and sometimes I see people, like, that are playtesting these games, and they're like, oh, yeah, this was on Kickstarter 2 years ago, and we're just finishing up the mechanics now. And it's like, well, maybe that's a bit too late, but whatever, people are going to get something, and it'll be kind of like what the thing that they thought that they were buying.
I was watching Feedback Frenzy last night, and, you know, without mentioning the game, there was a designer who said, our game's just coming out of alpha, and we're going to Kickstarter next month. And I watched every publisher on that panel have a panic attack and cringe a little bit.
Yeah, sometimes I can't, like, I wish I could just hide all of those emotions of, like, oh, you're doing that. And, like, well, and also the emotions that I think was from the same designer, where, like, there was a private chat that the people on Feedback Frenzy said, where I was like, oh, you know, like, you're just, you're getting advice from experts, but, you know, you could just completely ignore that, too, you know, do what you want.
It was interesting because, you know, that person just, I don't know if they were using it for promotion instead of, like, legitimate feedback. I hope they took some feedback from it because they got some. But I watched every publisher go up there, stomach, and, like, hold back a simple why.
Yeah, like, I think we need to be, like, clearer about what these things are for. Because, like, that Feedback Frenzy, like, two of the publishers were like, you don't have a sell sheet, why not? And I was like, oh, gosh, hold it down. Like, it's fine. We should give feedback on this panel or the pitch that we saw. But, yeah, like, what were the, like, I didn't get the idea, like, that all the people that had signed up were doing it for the same reasons, like, because there was, like, two or three of people that were, like, self-publishing, I think, and it's like, oh, do I give feedback in that manner then? But, like, I've been listening to this in a different manner where, like, I assume that all of the, like, well, my initial assumption was all of these are designers, and they want to pitch to a publisher so they can get it published. Like, that's what we're doing. That's why we have publishers that are doing the judging and not, like, random people that buy Kickstarters, because that is a different thing. I mean, get the thing, like, get the judges that are for that. So I think just being more clear about that.
Yeah, and I think there's a whole lot of notes about being more clear about things. You know, we've done Feedback Frenzy for 3 years now at Unpub, like at the live show. And so its intent is to be helpful by getting feedback at the real show while also being entertaining because you have an audience. And so you can play to the audience a little bit, which you couldn't do in this case. And I think that
I did. Assumptions,
yeah, well, yeah. But I mean, not in the same vein because you don't see the audience, right? I mean, mm-hmm. You were in the chat going, you know, keeping things going. So, mm-hmm. And we made that mistake on a lot of things where we just assumed people knew how Unpub worked and people knew the process. And that if we said EDT once in a document, that people would notice it.
Mike brought that up when he was on here.
Every single day.
What I want to bring up now is how unfair it is to everyone that's not an EDT that all the online conventions are an EDT. Like, what? How did that happen?
Because, like, everybody on the staff except for Danielle is EDT.
Well, no, what I mean is, like, Unpub is, Gen Con is, PAX U will probably be, like, if they have the PAX one will probably be an EDT. Like, why is every convention
PAX Australia?
EDT?
PAX Australia is probably Australia.
Okay, great. That's not CDT. CDT is central.
I mean, nothing, but then CDT. You have that question about in-person conventions, too. Why are they all in the same quarter of the country?
Yeah.
Because the Northeast is the best.
I don't have to go very far. And it's all about me.
Well, it is.
It makes sense that Unpub and PAX U would be an EDT because they're East Coast conventions. But Origins and Gen Con and stuff shouldn't be because they're central, right?
No. Nope. They are.
Origins is Eastern, and so is Indiana. Except for, like, the northwest corner of Indiana by Chicago.
I guess I don't know where the dateline is then.
It's Illinois and Indiana is the dateline, and it goes down where half of Tennessee is one and the other, and I'm in Central, which is Alabama, and that is your geography lesson for today.
Thank you.
It's actually really interesting. The sun sets an hour later in Columbus than it does on the East Coast because it's the eastern edge of a time zone versus the western edge of a time zone.
Yes. The yeah. not interesting part of it is that Alabama, where I live, should be in the eastern time zone. It's just not. So, like, our sun goes down really early. Like, we're, like, right on the edge. So it's, like you could just drive whatever, like, however 20 minutes or something and get to the other time zone. But, like, I don't know. Time zones are the worst.
Oh, I hate them.
Yeah. Well, this is from a software perspective, too, where, like, they're the worst. We should have 24, but instead we have, like, 1,000. It's so bad.
What about, is it Newfoundland? It was like, yeah, we're going to go half an hour ahead. It's not even a full hour. It's like a half an hour.
There's some that are like 15
there's
minutes
a, yeah,
or like
a couple.
They change.
India's got had 15 minute ones for a while.
That's in Nepal.
But then
why do I know that? Well, because it makes a lot less paperwork and stuff if you don't have to think about it. Like, you don't mess it up.
That would be nice. And if they got rid of daylight savings time, I'd be very happy.
Less people would die. That's a fact.
Really?
Yeah, more people die on daylight savings due to, like, heart attacks and stuff because it's an extra stress. And, like, I mean, if you are on the edge of, like, having a heart attack, you're probably going to have a heart attack on daylight savings when you were forced to change, like, when you wake up.
Huh. I did not know that.
Yep. Get rid of it. It actually doesn't save energy, so...
Yeah, it's pointless.
Well,
it causes a lot of confusion.
Detrimental.
Yeah.
And not pointless, because pointless tells me that it doesn't, like, do anything, but it does. It's bad. But anyway, like, board game conventions?
So, looping back around to NunPub, because Ben wasn't here when we started this talk. So, both Heather and...
I'm okay with that.
Both Heather and Mike...
Did they talk smack on me? I hope they did.
No, they talked a bit about the beginning of the idea from your joke. So I was just wondering if you wanted to give us your version of that story and how this terrible joke turned into a lot of work.
Having told my version a couple times, I made a joke, you know, because there's Gen Camp and there's Norigens and things like that. I had simply made a joke that I couldn't wait for NunPub, because this was right after we had announced the cancellation of the postponement date, which was this weekend. So NunPub was supposed to be this weekend when we postponed it. And so we had just announced that cancellation. So I just started making jokes about NunPub and how we'd all meet at the hotel. And, you know, we were joking, because we'd been joking in the back end that no matter how many notices we sent out, somebody was still going to show up Memorial weekend ready to play test games. People don't read.
They do not.
So I just made a joke a couple times on Twitter, and people were like, ha 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 ha. And so I've taken over as the director of NunPub because I don't have enough going on this year.
And you're great.
This is the group of people to talk about that too.
I knew back last fall that I'd be taking over NunPub this year. So I had that going, and then I decided, you know, let's start a nonprofit because I was convicted by Avi, and I'll call her out for it, to use my place of esteem within the community, you know, to make it a better one. And I told her I don't have a place of esteem, and she told me to shut up and accept it.
You've become someone of consequence, huh?
For various levels of consequence. With pathways and whatnot, I'm just, you know, let's add another thing to the mix. But I really want to get to the heart of what NunPub is and what NunPub is trying to do and what NunPub needs to do for the community. And I was speaking with Mike Belsol about, you know, questions that I have had, because Tanya will tell that she's heard me have the same conversation, and Carla had this conversation too. You're not cool enough, Chris. You'll just have to accept that.
That's fine.
Tanya will joke that she's heard me have the same conversation about 50 times. Because I want to get to the heart of what NunPub is and what NunPub needs to be. And so in that conversation, Mike just goes, so is NumPub real? What are you talking about? He's like, you were talking on Twitter. You said, you know, you talked about how excited you were for NumPub. Is that real? And I'm like, no, that's a joke. And he's like, why? I said, because that's a lot of work and I don't know how to do it. I wouldn't know, you know, where to start. And it turns out this is the week before Gamma decides that they want everybody talking about them. I'm trying to be polite and vague on some of these, you know, I'm trying to be polite, really, you know, but, you know, so it's the week before that. And then Mike and I get to talking right after that happens. I'm like, you know, maybe we could take this. And he's like, we could do that. So I reached out to Gil. I said, Gil, here's a dumb idea. Let me know your thoughts. Can we, you know, we could take all the work you've already done trying to build out this designer track. I mean, it has panels, it's got playtesting, it's got a lot of these things already, and bring it under the NumPub banner and do it later in the year. And Gil said, that's awesome. I'm not organizing anything this year. I'll put you in touch with my team. And that team was Danielle and David and Heather. And so they were kind of the core of the team. Danielle had done a lot of the behind the scenes, getting the streaming stuff set up. David had done a lot of the, you know, getting the volunteers together and figuring out what their responsibilities were and what the processes would be there. Heather had handled like interfacing with publishers to set up speed dating and some other things, and worked on getting a lot of the panelists and whatnot. And so we reached out to the team. Gail sent an email, introduced me. And they were all like, yeah, let's do it. So it's their fault for saying yes. And so we worked to get a date. We reached back out to the publishers. We reached back out to the panelists and just started putting this together. And, you know, I brought Mike and I'm like, Mike, you're coming in. You're going to be a part of this. And he took care of a lot of the, like, the Discord processes for how tables would be assigned out and how we'd handle the communication within the Discord and things like that. And they kind of all did their part, and I was just kind of above it, being like I told somebody else, I was the C-suite, and they were all the presidents and vice presidents making things happen and making decisions. But I was just kind of, here's how NumPub does it, and here's kind of why, and you know, what do I need to do? Okay, I've got the access to tabletop events, so I'll get that set up. I've got access to this. I'll get this going. And it just came together. I mean, we're talking beginning of June. And we pulled it off in a little over 2 months.
That's pretty impressive.
Because that legwork had been done, I never would have done this on my own. If Data said no, I wouldn't have then, you know, figured out how to do it myself.
So there's been, we talked earlier in the podcast about, or probably last episode to people listening now, because this is definitely getting split up, but talked about whether this is going to happen again. And while nothing is official, everyone seems to generally think it's a good idea to do this again. So I'm wondering, like you said, the main reason this happened was because so much was already done. Now, for the next one, if you do this again, you would have to start from scratch. Well, essentially scratch, still using the same systems. How much more work do you think that'll be? And when will you have to start planning if you are going to do another NumPub?
Our download, we've been having weekly calls since June, every Wednesday. So our download call for this will be this coming Wednesday, the whatever it is, 26, that sounds right. So we'll, you know, we'll have that conversation, and I think it's going to happen. I think a lot of the process is in place. I think there's a lot of work that needs to be done. You know, we're play testing this convention. That's really what we did this year. This was the first time it hit the table, and there were a lot of rough edges, you know, but people were understanding, fortunately. So we've got to go back and we've got to work on those rough edges. And Chris and Carly, you both know how much I love to do the homework when it comes to design and development. But we, you know, we're going to go back and we're going to figure out where those things are that we can change. You know, what we thought made sense and what made sense when it came to a process. You know, what we thought, assumptions we made about attendees. You know, it's one, when you're not in the same space, it's easy to get distracted. It's easy to get onto something else. It's easy to move around. And so that changed the nature of the convention, because you're not just like hanging out at the table and somebody's like, one more game, and you're like, okay, and then all of a sudden it's 3 a.m. You know, so how do we adjust our expectations and our processes for that? Because, you know, we don't know how, you know, we didn't know how things would be because we made those assumptions.
I still got caught by the one more game three times last night. I was like, I'm going to go cook dinner after this game. And then it was 10 p.m. and I hadn't had dinner yet.
So it can still work in certain situations.
Well, it can, but it's not, especially because of time zones, right? Because we're not all in that same space. You know, I think we pushed the day earlier. You know, Unpub doesn't start its blocks until noon. We had an extra block on Friday because we made assumptions about people being home. And that Friday morning block just wasn't as well attended as the others to start the day. I mean, we had the panels run at the same time. I don't think, you know, and we don't do that at the live show, but we felt that it would be better in this instance because it's all online. So that may have limited people that wanted to be in specific blocks and whatnot. We didn't know how it would go. We have a better feeling, and we'll take that, and we'll see where it goes from here. I'm proud of the fact that we did have to charge for this because we wanted to provide what we're calling lunch for all of our volunteers and all of our panels. We want to thank them for what they're doing. You know, there's no green room where you can get a snack or anything like that, and that's where some of that money would have gone to at a live show. You know, we didn't have, luckily, a five-figure hotel rent bill.
Yeah.
So we didn't need as much. But we were able to pull this show off without any sponsorship money. We just used the money that came from the badges. So, you know, we're going to look at that. We're going to look at the number of reserve tables we have. Maybe it can go up. Maybe it can go down. We're going to look at some of the communication that we've had, because I think there's ways to improve that, especially with more lead time. And now that people have been through it, they'll have, you know, a better understanding of a process. They'll have some frame of reference. So how do you feel it went? I mean, I haven't heard from any of you about it. I haven't had those discussions because I just haven't. But this is my normal process is that Sunday at Unpub after the hall closed, or after we, you know, shut down at 4 o'clock, everything ends. We start breaking down everything, and then I sit down, in that one more game element. Sometimes I'm leaving the hotel at midnight to go home just because I'm talking to people to start to get a feel right away. I mean, how did you feel? Like, Carla, you were on like 43 panels.
Yeah, something like that. I talked about it an amount when I first got on, but essentially best NunPub ever and best online convention experience ever for a variety of reasons. But I really enjoyed the panels and the fact that there was only one at a time and they were all on the same Twitch channel. Like, you could just put it up on your screen and it was super easy versus like at Gen Con, it was like, oh, I signed up for this panel and now I have to wait for a message. And then I go click through the weird Gen Con website. That's the worst. And every panel is on a different place and they're different systems. And why is this so hard? Like, the panels were fantastic. It was really easy to like figure out how to be on a panel and all that. The panels were really fun. I enjoyed doing them and also participating with the people on the Twitch, which was nice. As far as playtesting, it was kind of awkward. And also, I don't like Tabletop Simulator or staring at my computer forever. So I definitely did a lot less playtesting than any in-person convention, but a lot more than any other online convention. So we can't like really compare online and real because they're so different. But yeah, this is run the best for the best price and all that of all the online ones.
I don't want to say it's a sticking point, but it's something we pay attention to because we want to ensure that we aren't pricing anybody out. And that's not the reason that they couldn't come. We never want that to be the reason. I mean, we have costs to cover. We have, expenses of our own, not just at the event, but as an organization throughout the year. So we want to cover those, but we don't want to just money grab. And so, we had some conversations. That was one of the conversations is what can we do? What's a price? What makes sense? And, we charged $5 for attendees and $20 for a block. I think that was a good deal. But that again falls in line with the way we price our actual convention, that we want to keep our cost as little of a barrier of entry as possible. And there's, and I think, you know, being online took down so many barriers. I've seen a lot of feedback about panels and how they were, you know, better or different than some we've had in the past at the live show. And that simply comes from the fact that we didn't have to ask these people to fly to Baltimore, then take the light rail and hang out with a bunch of horses. you know, there's people that aren't part of that. You know, Unpub does have like a clique around it. It does have its own bubble to an extent. And, you know, people go between bubbles all the time. But there is a definite, you know, bubble that if you're not a part of it, and this is, I mean, there's a lot of panelists that this might have been their first introduction to Unpub. There's a lot of designers. This is their first introduction to Unpub because they didn't have to travel. And I think that's awesome. And hopefully, you know, we can use that in the future.
I still have so many panels I need to go back and watch because I was like, well, the panels I can watch later. The playtesting has to be done now.
Yeah. I watched every panel live because I was using the time to tweet out, you know, any little nuggets that we found during the panel. Because I've downloaded every panel because we're going to be putting them up on YouTube eventually.
I mean, I think the best lesson of the entire convention was the motivational message of even you can convince a duck to eat out of your hand.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I have faith in everyone if they try hard enough.
But you have to try.
I think you have to find the right duck.
If you don't try, you will not pat that duck. Okay?
You miss 100% of the ducks you don't try to pet?
Yes. That is the true life lesson from this pandemic. Maybe?
Probably. But
Did you see my dumb tweet about the vendor hall, Carla?
I did not.
When you get a chance, go look at Twitter. You got mentioned.
I will.
Because I'm dumb and, you know, we're still trying to figure out what Nunpup's voice is. It's different than Unpub, but it's still got our voice in it.
Well, Ben, speaking of, so you mentioned this was done without sponsors this year, and the prices were lower, which a lot of that is the hotel costs and stuff. But I was just thinking how other things, like I know Gen Con had this weird circle of icons for their quote-unquote room or whatever, and a lot of people hated it because it didn't make any sense. And like the more you paid, the bigger your icon was, which I kind of see what they're trying to do to make people paying a lot of money for a fake booth worth it. But it seems really strange. It doesn't translate the same online.
Well, so what that actually was, like, I was on there because I paid for a real life booth. So it corresponded to your real life booth that you will eventually get, but like you didn't pay money. Well, hopefully you didn't pay money to get just your picture on that weird map.
I thought that was the thing. Like, people were paying for that, not a real-life booth.
Well, like, I paid Gen Con for the real-life booth.
Yeah, and then you got this because they wasn't real-life Gen Con?
Yeah.
Nice.
And, like, theoretically, well, I probably should look into that, but, like, it rolls over until next year. So, like, if you typically spend a lot of money at Gen Con and you signed up to spend a lot of money at Gen Con, like, they still have all my money.
But you're still getting a real-life booth for that same money.
Yes.
Okay.
It was just like a perk.
That doesn't sound nearly as bad as I thought it was. But still,
well, I think
the circle doesn't make sense.
But like, you definitely should not have, because that was like horrific. Like, what? How does that work?
You didn't know if you shouldn't yet, I think. That's the thing. Like, you know, everybody's still trying to figure it out. We were just like, hey, online playtesting and panels. Unpub.
I don't know. I'm glad there wasn't like some weird vendor hall where like people could get offended, because like Origins was like, so like I usually get a big booth and like they did not give me a big online booth, and they didn't give me a booth anyway, and I had to contact them and be like, hey, I sent you money, you have it, I get an online booth. We had this conversation, like I forwarded them the conversation where they said I get a booth, and they're like, oh yeah, we forgot to put you in. And then, like, they give me a booth, and it's a 10x10, and I'm like, hey, I buy a larger booth. You have lots of my money. What's up with this? And they're like, oh, yeah, demo booths don't count. They're not real. And it's like, oh, why do I spend money on this if I don't, if it's not real? Why is there this weird arbitrary line? Origins, I don't know. Origins, they got a lot of hate this year, and that was all for good reason, because, like, from a publisher standpoint, they treated us like garbage. Like, it was so bad. Like, even without Black Lives Matter and all the shit they did, I was just so angry. And then by the time, like, they did all that, where they were, like, not talking about, like, Black people and, like, them leaving and doing weird shit, it was like, fuck them. Like, they're the worst. Like, what is Origins?
I've never heard of it.
I don't know. Well, they are, I don't know, maybe full of racists?
You can go buy ice cream at a fancy store.
But anyway, NunPub, much better experience. They never, like, told me to, like, that my booth that I give lots of money for doesn't count.
I mean, it's good to hear, because we weren't sure what... And so part of, you know, Chris, part of the reason that we were not, we didn't really want to push hard on sponsors is because we didn't know, like, what can we offer them, right? We're not going to have a virtual booth for them.
Exactly.
There's no sales. There's no physical. We weren't sure how, like, oh.
There's no sign on the bathroom.
Pitches and scout things and stuff like that. Oh, I still want to do that. I still want to do that. I mean, you know, there's, I still want to put names on those bathrooms. I still want to offer that as a sponsorship. It's been a joke for years now.
It's a great spot for sponsorship.
We actually figured out what it was going to be, and I can't remember anymore. I think one of the jokes was, it was, are you a panda or a pandasaurus? You know, we just, you know, that's, they're right there, because we want to offer, you know, publishers like Carla, if she's going to give us money, I don't want to just take her money unless we can give something in return, while at the same time recognizing that UnPub is also the convention that, you know, funds our organization for the year.
Yeah.
So I want to give her and any other publisher that might give us money, I want to give them something for it. And, you know, a big sticker or a big icon, I don't think is that thing. And we weren't sure, how does that work for this convention? And so anytime you saw, you know, before the panelists this year, if you saw the special thanks, every one of those was somebody that was involved in making the convention happen. You know, these people were giving of their time, not necessarily giving of their wallets. But we still want to thank them, because, like, there are ways that we can take, you know, take advantage and expertise from somebody and have them benefit the experience without just having them open their wallet. I mean, I'll take their money too. I'll take everybody's money, because hotel rooms are expensive, but
they certainly are.
I'd rather take your time if I can. And I mean, that's, you know, cancellations is something we've had to deal with too. We, you know, we offered a push to next year or a cancellation, and in that process, we refunded about 50 badges. So we're, you know, going to put those up for sale probably sometime end of September, early October.
Yeah.
And God forbid if next year gets canceled.
Well, only 50, that's a pretty small number.
Yeah, it was only about 50 badges. Think. I've got the paperwork somewhere. We figured it out because we needed to find out how much, you know, it was going to go away and make sure that everything's covered. Because we'd already paid the deposit for the hotel. We're just moving it forward. So it's not like you're just sitting on money waiting for something to happen.
Yeah. I think a lot of that, it goes to, like, I think we were talking about earlier in this podcast even, UnPub is, it's so much a community. So it is the same people coming back year after year. Like, new people come in, obviously. This is only my third year of UnPub, really. But it is the same people over and over, so most people are like, yeah, push it to next year. I'm obviously going to UnPub. That's what I do every year, as long as I'm allowed.
Well, and that's where Memorial Weekend did change some of that. You know, we still sold out pretty quickly, with being Memorial Weekend originally. So there were a lot of, you know, I guess you'd call them the old heads that unfortunately weren't able to make the new weekend because of plans they already have and events they're a part of. So it did open the doors for new people. You know, if we could get a space that held 100 tables, we would sell out those 100 tables every single block.
Yeah.
You know, if we could get 150 tables, but there's a point at which we have to then guarantee we're going to have that many playtesters. You know, that's what we have. We have the players, we have the public, that general public that's, you know, you're not seeing necessarily at a Metatopia or a Protospiel, you know, or even, you know, to some extent, like a first exposure playtest hall, you know, where those people are, they're already at the game convention, right? They're self-selecting to do that thing as part of their event. And we've got people coming just for our thing. So we can't grow and then not have the players show up.
Yeah, I mean, playtesters is definitely seems to be the bottleneck for any of these events, especially the online ones now, because I don't know if you were on, Ben, when we were talking about, but you're not getting those walk-in people. They're just coming to do something fun for the day because there's more of the process to get online, join the Discord, and do all this stuff. So it's,
yeah.
Playtesters are tough.
There were three online conventions this weekend.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, people that may have gone to one or the other were now, some of them were forced to make a choice. I mean, Gil Hova pulled a Phil Collins at Live Aid. He was on both sides of the Atlantic this weekend for different events.
Yeah,
because he was also at UKGE.
Yeah, Emma was too. I know she had to jump out of.
Yeah, she left our panel to go be on a panel for them.
Yeah.
How dare she?
But it's. I mean, that's one of the cool things about the online things, though, is you can hit all these things, but the downside is people are kind of pulled in every direction all at once.
Yeah, and I think that's just because a lot of places, again, were scrambling for the leftover available weekends, right? Because
yeah.
We're still going to be a physical event. Well, we don't want to be too close to Gen Con. Okay, we're 3 weeks after Gen Con, so that's good. And we're still far enough ahead of, you know, Essen, you know, because they hadn't canceled yet when we pushed to August, you know, and then when we canceled and things. So, you know, everybody didn't want to be. That's why Unpub's moved around so much in the last few years, because there's 52 weekends in a year, and 53 of them are bad. So I think, you know, you'll see some of that settle down over the next year as people get into more of a rhythm. I've seen so many playtest groups get posted in the Discord for Unpub. It's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Including mine.
Yes, yours too.
Which is at weirddraftgames.com/discord.
I've heard you say that on 14 different panels this weekend, that feels like.
I mean, people should join my Discord if they like me in playtesting and games.
Or horse breeding. Which ties in very well to Unpub.
Yeah, we talk about that.
Heading ducks.
Yes. Oh, that, yeah. Yeah, we were doing a lot of horse breeding this weekend because we weren't staring at, like, the weird parts of horses. Like, why do all those pictures, like horses are cool and all, but, like, do I need to see the face of a horse that close up and that large? Like,
yes.
I don't know. I just have questions.
When you have to have 6,000 horse pictures and they all need to be different, eventually.
I mean, but do they? Like, does every room have different pictures? I figure, like, they're just staring all at the same horse. Like,
I think
there's
different horse pictures.
I don't know. It's very confusing.
It's a theme.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the whole, the Preakness is there and whatever, so, in that general area.
Yeah, there's reasons. It makes perfect sense. It's horses. That's just life.
It's not logical, but it's reasons.
It's causal.
So what was of the panels you were able to watch, what was the most interesting one for you?
Interesting question. Andrea, you want to answer that first?
Well, I was going to say the most interesting to me was definitely the Lightning Game Jam, just because I like anything interactive more than something I'm just sitting to watch. Although a lot of the ones that I plan to just sit and watch, I saved because I'll put them on in the background while I do other stuff later.
Yeah,
I mean, the Lightning Game Jam is something Kathleen's done at a couple different conventions, and she was planning to do it at Unpub, and she felt that she'd be able to pull it off online, so I'm glad we were able to try that for her.
Actually, the only panel that I saw all of was your opening one, Ben. which...
I got kicked off?
Well, no, because I sat down to watch it at the beginning, and all the other ones, because I'm at home, and we've mentioned this several times, it's hard to get to things on time because you've got real life also there. So I was always showing up late. I was watching Doug and John's panel, which I was really interested in, and then I lost power in the middle of it. So I just missed part of that panel. And then for Tess's also, I wanted to get to the beginning, but I was trying to get things ready for this, so I missed the beginning of her panel and only got to listen to the second half of it, which, I mean, they're all really interesting, but I could not really get fully involved in anything because of just not being separated from life and stuck in a horse hotel. I can't focus as well.
But I was really excited about the one about turn mechanisms, and then I realized that I already read that chapter in the book, so I didn't need to sit through the panel, and I'm just glad that other people get to see it, because I've been trying to convince everyone to read the book.
Yeah. Jeff, I'd reached out to Jeff to see if he had anything, and he's like, what do you got already? And he's like, oh, I think this will be good, you know, because it was... You know, one of the things that we want to try to bring to Unpub as a whole is the next level of panels. It's, you know, we've had great success with those 101, 102 classes. And so what's the next step? Where can we go for somebody who's been doing this for a while? What resource can we offer her, them, that's still going to be engaging and informative and entertaining? And so I think we were able to do that with some of the panels that we had this year. At least I hope we were.
I definitely learned about some new junk food flavors, so that was very helpful.
Oh, that's, yeah, I didn't even get to eat most of my stuff on camera. It was disappointing.
And I learned that apparently St. Louis doesn't know how to make pickles, which seems really sad.
Did you hear they got the pickles them in Kool-Aid?
Yeah. So
Provel is like if you took a sharp provolone, or sharp, not provolone, but sharp Velveeta. Like it melts, but not really. Like it doesn't get stringy. You can look it up. It's a thing.
Sounds wonderful.
I also heard that like the pizza in St. Louis, like they have this pizza that like somebody was like, I hate how the cheese on pizza is stringy, so I'm going to make this pizza cheese that's not stringy and also tastes really funky. So
yeah, that's the Provel.
Oh yeah, that's, I don't know.
So it's just terrible ideas all around.
Cheese. Like, why would that be so important? Anyway, I do have to go. So this was really fun, and everyone should go to the next Nun Pub if it happens, and yeah. Un Pub if it doesn't.
Yeah, you want to Did you say where people can reach you, Carla, yet?
I did not. I am Carla Kopp. I run Weird Draft Games. You can find me on Twitter at Weird Giraffes. My Discord is weirddraftgames.com/discord. And I'm also on like Facebook and Instagram and stuff, weirddraftgames.com. But go to the Discord, it's fun, and the Twitter also. So yeah, have a great rest of the day, everyone.
Awesome. Thank you for coming.
Bye.
And this is probably a good place to stop the recording in general, because we've passed 2.5 hours now and I'm tired. Definitely longest episode ever.
Yeah. I've gotta go pack up the U-Haul, so you know.
I need to get back to playtesting because before I realized there was Nun Pub this weekend, I had already made plans to playtest tonight. So, more, right?
That's the addiction. So, if both of you would like to just give contact info or anything you're going to or whatever you want to share before we close this up?
You can go first, Andrea.
I have not set up great contact channels yet. I just use Facebook and Discord right now. So, it's Andrea Pinkham.
And you're in all of the Discords.
I am now in all of the Discords after they got posted in the NunPub server this afternoon.
And a lot of those are already in the Cardboard Edison list, so.
All right, I got to check up the Cardboard Edison list because I haven't done any of the remote stuff.
Chris, I posted it to GMG Facebook already.
I do not check the Facebook. We talked about this. I wasn't getting the updates correctly.
You didn't get updates from people you weren't friends with. We're friends.
Then maybe I just saw it and moved on with my day. It really depends on what I'm doing at the time when I check. But, okay, and Ben, contact info.
I'm Ben. I'm on Twitter as some fat kid. That's S-U-M fat kid. I'm just a fat guy in a pink shirt. Like we said earlier, I'm no one of consequence regardless of what I'm doing. You can find Unpub at the Unpub on Twitter or unpub.net. You can find Nunpub at nunpub or nunpub.net. Pretty consistent in that way. That's N-O-N. NUNPUB for NUNPUB, not NUNPUB. That's a whole different organization. And if you want to give me a call, you can do so at 1-800-PUB. Hopefully it works.
I'm sure it will. Awesome. Well, thank you both for coming on, and thank you to everyone else who was on and had to leave earlier and make this 2-hour-and-40-minute recording. Wow, this is going to be a pain to edit. So thank you for that, everyone. And enjoy the rest of NUNPUB, which is maybe technically over, but not, and all that.
Curse, so you win.
But Carla did, so.
Good job, Carla. Proud of you.
There's always one in there. But awesome. So thank you, everyone. Hope you enjoyed listening to these maybe 3 episodes, I'm thinking, at this point. And, yeah, we'll see where things go.
That's all for this episode. Financial support for the Board Game Workshop is provided by our annual game design contest and our Patreon supporters. Special thanks to our inventor-level supporters, Boss Cottis, Roscoe Shock, Brad Batchelor, and Chris Turner. If you would like to support the show, go to patreon.com/theboardgameworkshop. You can contact the show on Twitter, Facebook, and Discord. Go to theboardgameworkshop.com for links, past episodes, and information about our design contest and other events. Thanks for listening!